straightforward.
Water supply, yeah.
Okay.
It's in the kitchen.
So those of you who don't remember, we'll learn the Rambam first. You all should have a copy of the Rambam. The words, anyway. Mitzvah taseh v'tpalel v'chol yom sh'ne'emah v'avadetem et Hashem Elokechem. You know that the Rambam says it's a mitzvah. That means that there's a pasuk in the Torah, someplace, that makes it into a mitzvah. That's the primary ingredient in a mitzvah. And so the Rambam will always say that. I'll say, mitzvah taseh, here's the pasuk. Then you could always discuss whether you think the pasuk is appropriate, whether you think it does the job or it doesn't do the job, but that's a different matter. But this is what the Rambam says. Mipia shmua lamdu. That means there's a interpretation in the air, right? When Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Torah, so he taught all kinds of things, right? That's mipia shmua. Lamdu she'avodah zohi tefillah. That the correct pshat in the pasuk is avodah equals tefillah, because avodah obviously could mean avodat beit hamikdash, right? That's perhaps even the more obvious interpretation of the pasuk. Avodah zohi tefillah shenemar ulavdo b'chol levavchem. Amru chachamim, ezohi avodah shebalev zo tefillah. So this is kind of a way of justifying the fact that mitzvah, that tefillah is a mitzvah min ha-Torah. Ein minyan ha-tefillot min ha-Torah, but the Rambam emphasizes, even though the Rambam says, in our time we daven three times a day, sometimes four times on special days, even more once in a while, he says, minyan ha-tefillot ain't no min ha-Torah. Vein mishnah ha-tefillah hazot min ha-Torah, the words of the tefillah are not from the Torah. In tefillah zman kavua min ha-Torah. The Rambam means is that this one tefillah obligation that you have each day, you can perform anytime during the day. It doesn't. Anytime during the day is during the day. Like there are certain rules of doing mitzvot. Like if you can do a mitzvah sooner, you should do it sooner rather than later. But the chiyuv of doing the mitzvah, is timeless. It's not time bound. Halacha bet, lefichach nasim v'avadim chayavim b'tefillah, lefishi mitzvah taseh shelo zman grama. Okay, so that means that according to the Rambam, certainly women avadim is of course an eved Kanani, right? Not an eved Yisraeli. An eved Yisraeli is a Israeli. He's just under some kind of economic arrangement. But an Eved Kanani was mitgayer. Every Eved Kanani goes through a kind of a giyur. But he's not fully a Jew. He's only chayev. An Eved Kanani is only chayev in the mitzvot asay that a woman is chayev in. You got that? But most people would agree that there's a difference between there's a serious difference in a woman and an Eved Kanani. I don't mean that as a joke. But there's a difference between the obligation of a woman to Torah and the obligation of an Eved Kanani to Torah. A woman's obligation to Torah is total. She's obliged to all the mitzvot. And she accepted the Torah of all of the mitzvot at Har Sinai. There's no difference between a man and a woman. However, in the system makes certain differentiations. Certain mitzvot Kohanim do, certain mitzvot Leviim do, certain mitzvot men do and women don't do. Makes certain kinds of differentiation. But the obligation of everybody who stood at Har Sinai is to the entirety of the Torah. There's no distinction. An Eved Kanani is only accepting those mitzvot that a woman is chayevah to do. You understand that there's a difference? Mm-hmm. Right? In terms of Kabbalat HaTorah, there's no difference between a man and a woman. Right? There's no difference between a Kohen and a Yisrael. There's no difference between, you know, people who perform functions of one kind or another and Kabbalat HaTorah. But the Eved Kenani was mitgayer. Now everybody knows that giur today, when somebody's mitgayer, you say, are you going to accept the whole Torah? And you're supposed to say yes, right? You're supposed to accept the whole Torah. Don't say, I'm going to accept the Torah that I like, or the Torah that people keep today, and not accept the Torah that people don't keep today. You know, the Rambam and the Sefer HaMitzvot, at the end of the section of Mitzvot, they say, you know, the book is divided into three parts, Sefer HaMitzvot. Introduction, Mitzvot Aseh, Mitzvot Lo Taseh. At the end of the section on Mitzvot Aseh, the Rambam makes a very interesting cheshbon. He says, of all the Mitzvot in the Torah, Mitzvot Aseh, we only keep 64 today. 64, which is not so many. I mean, maybe a little oppressive to us, but it's not so many numerically. So we keep 64 Mitzvot. So the ger, if a ger came and said, I'm only willing to accept the mitzvot that we do, why should I accept the mitzvot that we don't do? He wouldn't be accepted as a ger, because the model for giur, as the Rambam says, the model for giur is Kabbalat HaTorah, Matan Torah. And then the entire Torah was accepted by Klal Yisrael, even though they didn't know what the entire Torah was. They didn't know what it included. They knew it had a lot of obligations, but they didn't know specifically what those obligations are. So again, there's a difference between the obligation of a woman to the Torah and obligation of the Eved Kenani to the Torah. However, the Rambam says that Nashim v'Avadim chayvim b'tfilah k'vishim mitzvot aseh shelo zman grama. We all know that when it comes to doing mitzvot, different people are patur from different mitzvot, right? Kohanim, they have obligations that other people don't have, etc. And then women are paturot from mitzvot aseh shezman grama. Now, as a general principle, if a woman wants to do, you know, feels she wants to do a mitzvah that she's paturah from doing, she certainly can. She could do it, and she gets credit. They get credit for doing a mitzvah. And it's not true that she gets less credit. Logically, it's not true that the woman will get less credit than a man. You know, even though there's a principle that says if you're mitzuvah v'oseh, you're better than eno mitzuvah v'oseh, which usually means if I keep the mitzvah because I like it, then I have less ol malchus shamayim. So I keep the mitzvah because I like it, so I get less credit. But if you think about it this way, everybody's on a scale, right? There's like 0 to 10. Everybody's on a scale, right? So men get more credit than women, right, for doing the same mitzvah that women are p'turot from doing. But the men themselves, there are 10 men, they're men in the 10 category of doing the mitzvot, and then there are jerks who are in the 1 category of doing a mitzvah. Now women, they get less, so you have to like move their scale over a little bit. They're going to get less credit on the same level,
do a better job.
But they could be better than the jerks, right? So that it doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't mean, even though they say in heaven, if they know that this man and this woman are somehow equal in their devotion, but if one is mitzvah v'oseh and the other is not mitzvah v'oseh, mitzvah v'oseh is going to win. So you say, okay, geinu chinami. But what if the one that's eino mitzvah v'oseh has a lot more knowledge, kavana, intention, devotion? So then, who says she's going to get less schar than the man who's just doing it because that's what they told him to do, right? So even though it starts out being very clear, it ends up being kind of less clear and encouraging for women who should just keep doing it.
Goes back to kavana.
Back to
kavana.
Right. It's all, everything's about kavana. So this is what it says: Mizad Zedrumankaroma, Elachiyu mitzvah zo kachi shiheh adam mitchanein umitfaleo b'chol yom. Now, I told you that the word mitchanein, which comes up in next week's parasha, right, that chanan el Hashem, that became a very significant word in the idea of tefillah. Right? In other words, in Shmone Esrei, I mean, this I'm just telling you as an aside, in Shmone Esrei there's no tchina. There's no tchina. Because tchina means you're crying and you're unhappy and the situation is terrible. So, Shmone Esrei is very pro forma. It's like Yerushalayim. Could you rebuild Yerushalayim, please? Could you set up David HaMelech as the king in Yerushalayim? It's like straightforward. You don't feel the tchina. The tchina comes after Shmon Esrei when we daven, right? Rachum v'chanun chatosi l'vanecha. This is like a whole different idea. And you see, as the Rishonim has said, that we were not able to deal with tefillah without tchina. We felt the need to add it, so we did. We added tchina to tefillah. We say, Ela chiyuv mitzvah zo kachi shiyeh adam mitchanein umitpalel b'chol yom magid shivcho shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so this is the Rambam says. The Rambam says based on the Shmoneh Esrei. The Shmoneh Esrei starts from Sheva, so that's what you have to do, right? V'achar kach shoel tzrachav shehu tzorich lahem bevakasha b'tchina v'achem noten sheva v'ol dayal Hashem al ha-tovah sheshpia lo kol echad l'fi kocho. So you see there's a certain pattern in saying Shmon Esrei, and the Rambam says that even in the earlier times, when everybody davened on their own, everybody had their own nusach and learned how to daven at home and was, you know, learned from their parents what davening was, even in those days, the formal part of davening was the same. It started with Shevach, and then there was Bakosha, and then there was Hodoya. That's how you daven. Okay? We know that eventually we understand that what the Rambam meant was if you had the words, if you were able to express yourself. Right? The Rambam understood that not everybody was as smart as he was, and not everybody could easily write the Yad HaChazakah. So since he knew that, He said, but this is always a problem. It's always a problem with mitzvot. I think it's a problem also in talking to people, that most mitzvot are democratic. There's no entrance exam to doing a mitzvah, right? Whoever has to do the mitzvah, it's totally democratic. And so because of that, there must be a way for everybody to achieve the mitzvah. I mean, it doesn't make sense otherwise. So if you say Lulav and Esrog, okay, you go to a Lulav and Esrog guy, and you say, give me a kosher Lulav and Esrog, and he gives it to you, so then you should be able to accomplish that. Or you go to a matzah guy, and you say, give me a matzah. So you should be able, no matter who you are, no matter how little you know about Pesach and matzah and chometz and all of that, you should be able to accomplish the mitzvah. Because the mitzvah is, after all, democratic. That doesn't mean that there are no higher levels of achievement. Of course, there are higher levels of achievement, but on the basic level, it must be that people are able to accomplish the mitzvah. And so the same thing is true about tefillah. But the Rambam sticks in a problem here. He said, Halacha Gimel. Ima yaragil marbe betachan techina uvakasha. Ima yaragil. Like if you could do it, if you know how to do it. I mean, you know, marbe betachina uvakasha. You just do more. You do more of it. And that makes sense to the Rambam, that you would not be limited. You wouldn't be limited by a text. That's also what Rachum V'Chanon is. Of course, when printing came in to the world, everything stopped. But Rachum V'Chanon was added, right? A paragraph, another line, another paragraph. I mean, it wasn't like somebody sat down. Not the Gemara says that Anshei Knesset HaGdola wrote Shmoneh Esrei. Or Shimon HaPakuli added one bracha, right? The bracha of Laminim. Who added Rachum Chanun? Who added all those paragraphs after Shmoneh Esrei? People, or what they called? They called Shliach Tzibur, what the Gemara says sometimes called the Chazan. Chazan means a person who we might call him today a Gabbai. Well, somebody who's in charge of the functioning of the shul. So, in those days, before printing, that is, everything before printing, in the 15th century, the 15th century is the century where things were printed, right? In Kunabala, that's the 15th century. So before the 15th century, you could add. You could have a book, like a handwritten book, and you could add a paragraph if you were talented in that way, right? And you added all of those, and the things that were on your mind. The things that are on the mind, if you read the Tachanun, the reason that it's a kind of little impressive to us is because we would like to feel that things had changed, but Rachum V'Chanun, all of those brachot, all of those tefillot are very depressing. They're very unhappy. And they ask for God's mercy, not because it's something we deserve. Like we reach Shmoneh Esrei, it's more like, well, it's going to happen. We just want to make it happen a little faster, a little better. I mean, but it's all clear. It's clear about what's going to happen. When you read the Tachnun, it's not so clear. When you read the Rachum V'Chanun, it's not so clear. Okay, V'chein minyan ha'tfilot kol echad kefi yicholto. So he says, Rambam says, even in earlier times, in the Doraita situation, when you only had to daven once a day, obviously, there are people who daven more than once a day, right? Or people who are out of work, I guess. He says, "Yesh mitpalalim pa'amim harbei, v'akol yiyu mitpalalim nochach hamikdash b'kol makom sheyeh. V'akol yiyu mitpalalim nochach hamikdash, nochach hamikdash." I don't know. I mean, you could. We also try to daven nochach hamikdash. Usually, I mean, it's like if you're in America, it's kind of a little silly, but I mean, approximately, you daven east, right? But in Yerushalayim, the place was very makpid on that. I know there's a shul I went to, and somebody, one of the parishioners, had taken sheets of paper and put like the shape of a compass on it, and an arrow, and he put it down in front of every seat. And in front of every seat, the arrow pointed to the Kodesh Kodeshim. So you see, the arrow was different in each seat. I thought that was a little extreme, but you know, but you understand the idea. Like, being extreme is very popular today. So what could you say? But I haven't seen it since. I've only seen it in one shul, and since then it's been big. But I guess you know, the guy who did it, you know, was once a Boy Scout. And so, in any event, although yesh mitpalel pam achat biyom v'yesh mitpalel pamim harbe, v'kol yimpalim nochar mikdash. I think Nochach Mikdash is an important concept, right? Nochach Mikdash, because I think also that the Beit Hamikdash, the Beit Hamikdash, because of its grandeur and because that everything was going on in the Beit Hamikdash was l'shem Hashem. Everything in there was nothing else in the Beit Hamikdash except for God. Everything was for God, for what God had commanded, that produced kavana, that whatever kavana is, you would have it in the Beit HaMikdash. And so l'nochach Beit HaMikdash is a good idea. You know, if you could conjure up in your mind, the Gemara says, you know, what if you're on a donkey and the donkey's going in a different way, and you're going to, okay, so you could daven anyway, but it's a good idea to think about the Beit HaMikdash, if you can. In order to do that, I think you have to learn Hilchot Beit HaMikdash, things that we don't learn. We don't learn those things so commonly. Like even in yeshivot, most of the Talmidim don't learn Kachim. But I think you have to learn Kachim in order to understand what it means to be L'Nochach Beit HaMikdash. It's not just the angle of where you're standing when you daven Shemone Esrei, but it's more like being there. It's almost like being there, and you're overwhelmed. You're overwhelmed by what's happening, and we can't imagine it. But the Beit HaMikdash is a very beautiful building, but it's not just the beauty of the building of Shlomo HaMelech that I'm talking about, but the fact that Avodas Hashem, that you have the coalesces these two ideas, the idea that there is Avoda in the Beit HaMikdash, and there's Avoda called davening. They're the same. They're not the same, but they enhance each other. Like you want to do it, you want to do what you're doing with as much kavanah as you possibly can muster, and certainly the Beit HaMikdash helps that. It's an aid to that, even if the Beit HaMikdash only exists in your mind. But in order for the Beit HaMikdash to exist in your mind, I think you have to learn about it. You have to kind of have it in your mind, and then like having something in mind is dependent on really having it in mind. Right, you can't have it in mind if you don't have it in mind. So everything, it's like short-term memory and long-term memory. You know, like short-term, I guess. You know, the short-term memory, you can think about something for a minute. But if you want to think about something in a regular way and over again, it's got to be more than that. It's got to be more than that. So in any event, now we we're up to Halacha Dalet. Halacha Dalet is the Halacha that we talked about yesterday. Right? So Halacha Dalet says, Kevan Shegalu Yisrael. This is the Rambam. This whole Halacha Dalet is the Rambam's invention. I mean, not Shegalu Yisrael. He's talking about Galut Bavel. B'yumei Nebuchadnezzar. 586 B.C.E. 586 BCE, Nebuchadnezzar. This is called the Babylonian exile, because Nebuchadnezzar was a Babylonian. Now, he conquered the world at the time. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, there was only Yehuda, right? Because the other tribes, most of them, some of the tribes, I told you, like Binyamin and Shimon, I didn't tell you, like Binyamin and Shimon, they were small tribes. Yehuda, here, you see this here. you see this map of Israel? You see it? So here you have the Kinneret, and here you have the Red Sea, Yam HaMelech, the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea, right? And here's the Mediterranean on this side. And here's Yerushalayim, smack in the middle. So the way Eretz Yisrael was divided up, right, Matos, Masei, our parashiyot. Well, we're almost up to Wednesday morning. You switch to next week, but until Wednesday morning, we're up to Masei, or Chutz La'aretz, Matos, Masei, even. So, all of this, all north of Yerushalayim, were most of the tribes, including Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevi Menashe, were to the east of the Jordan River. Right now, Sanherib, who was the king of Assyria, got rid of all of them, all the tribes except for Yehuda, which was a big tribe in the south. In the beginning of the book of Shoftim, it says that Yehuda was the only tribe that managed to expel all of the idolaters from its territory, except of course for the Plishtim, who were where Azra is today, right? The Plishtim somehow, they managed to hang in there. So Yehuda was successful. Now there were two small tribes associated with Yehuda to the north, like north Yerushalayim, part of Yerushalayim, and north is Binyamin, and to the south, Shimon. Both of those tribes, Reuven and Binyamin and Shimon, disappeared. Can I put down the map now? Okay. So they both disappeared. They were absorbed into Yehuda. So when Nebuchadnezzar, when we say Nebuchadnezzar conquered conquered Eretz Yisrael, it means he conquered Yehuda. That's what they was. There was just Yehuda. So that's what the Rambam is referring to. Kevan shegalu Yisrael b'mei Nebuchadnezzar, all of them were exiled. All of the tribe of Yehuda, and whoever else was included with Yehuda, the other tribes having been already exiled by Sanherib in 722 BCE. Right? That's Jewish history. For some reason the Jews switched from a 12 tribe kind of setup to a one tribe or no tribe kind of setup. Yeah.
Didn't the Levium remain as a separate tribe?
The Levium, I guess they were a separate tribe. But they didn't have territory.
Okay.
So they're usually not considered. It was their territory was included in everybody else's territory. Mm-hmm. So they did Avodah in the Beit HaMikdash, and so did the Kohanim. There were also Kohanim. They were, I guess, part of that tribe. So that's what happened b'mei Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha. HaRasha because he destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. Nitarvu b'paras v'yavan v'shar ha'umot. Those, the people who were exiled, became part of the culture of the Persians and the Greeks. That's what the Rambam says. In those days, right, you know that the world of Babylonia was captured by, or taken over by, the Persians. The Babylonians gave in to the Persians. Now, did that happen in a day? Probably not. What happened before Cyrus, Koresh, became the chief honcho of all of this, of the whole world? Well, the Persians probably also still had a lot of influence. I mean, they were the influential ones. They eventually beat the Babylonians. The Babylonians had this very complicated way of writing things. You know, they wrote things on stone. In an alphabet or in a way that's called cuneiform, and that retarded them, because you had to be a big mumche to write, and so they could never writing. That's why the 22-letter alphabet that we use is so brilliant, because it's easy, and you could teach people easily to read and write, which, if you're trying to carry on the Torah, turns out to be an important thing. So the Rambam says this: Netarvu v'paras v'yavan, u'she'ar ha'umot, whoever they may be, v'noldu lahem banim ba'artzot ha'goyim. Now you're talking about a shorter period of time and a longer period of time. Like, when did Jews come back to Eretz Yisrael? When did the exile officially come to an end? When Cyrus, if you look in the book of Ezra, and then the book of Nehemiah, Koresh allowed the Jews to go back to Eretz Yisrael and to build the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Right? That was Koresh. And that was in 535 BCE. It maybe was 536. I don't know. But I always say 535. So between 586 and 535 is only 50 years. And 50 years is two generations, three generations. But the assimilation of the Jews in the diaspora was great. There were all kinds of strange ideas that people had. For example, as you see with the Egyptians, that religion is kind of localized. So that if you're in a foreign country, you have to adopt the religion of that country, otherwise you're going to be in trouble. And that's the story of Daniel and his friends, Daniel ish chamudot. I shouldn't mention so much Tanakh. It's not a bad thing. It's a Jewish book. You know, like, if you know Tanakh, it's definitely not bad.
It's good for the Jews.
Yeah, you know, it's you can't fault it. Noldu lahem banim ba'artzot ha'goyim, votan ha'banim. Now, what happened to the people who were born in the diaspora, according to the Rambam? nitbalbelu sifatam, which literally could mean they mixed up their language, which I think probably means it's like your grandparents who came from Europe who thought they were speaking English and using Yiddish words at the same time, right? So that's what happened to them. That's what happened to them. Now, does this sound like a tragedy? Not to me. Nitbalbelu sifatam. Vaitasvat kol echad ve'echad me'orevet milshonot harbe. And whatever it was that people spoke, it was a mishmash of different languages. Like, what's wrong with that? What's so terrible? The Rambam says, so you had this situation with the Rambam is saying, if I translate the Rambam into comprehensible language, people were unable to daven because they didn't have language. Now, why didn't they have language? I haven't got a clue. He says, what difference does it make in heaven if you daven? I mean, what's the halacha? Are you allowed to daven in a foreign language?
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, art school would be out of business, right? Of course you're allowed to daven in a foreign language. Well, the thing is that the Mishnah Berurah says, correctly, I think that if you can daven in Hebrew, even if you don't understand the Hebrew, you should daven in Hebrew because the implications of the words in Hebrew are not the same as the implications of the words in any other language, so that it's just like any other kind of use of language, right? There's like the newspaper, the way the newspaper uses English, for example, and the way Shakespeare used English, right? You're not going to like analyze the newspaper ad infinitum, right? You know, you read it and that's it. It's but Shakespeare, you can chazer it and chazer it and chazer it and try to get new meanings out of it because the words, as he used them, were much more variable, and you have to get that variable notion. That variable notion.
That's what
so
we want.
What
we want to daven with Shakespearean words? Wouldn't we want to? Be
no, we have no choice. That's Hebrew. In other words, you get credit. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. Like you don't really understand what you're saying, right? But you're saying something that has more profound meaning than the English version. So I guess the best thing to do, if you don't know Hebrew, but you can read Hebrew, is to daven in Hebrew and then daven in English.
Do you think the Rambam would consider English to be a mixture of languages? Because that's essentially what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everything is a mixture of languages.
That's what I mean. Do you think the Rambam was saying like how we're talking, how we throw in Yiddish words? And
No. I think he's talking about people who are crippled. Because he says here... כיוון שהיה מדבר, אינו יכול לדבר כל צורכו בלשון אחת. That's what the Rambam says. That these people are crippled. And because they're crippled, they couldn't do the mitzvah of davening. It was the Rambam, for the Rambam. It doesn't make any sense that the Chachamim went and made a takana called Shmona Esrei if for the last million years everybody davened. And everybody seems to know how to daven. If you have a problem, you turn to heaven and you can daven. I mean, even today, is there somebody who doesn't know how to daven? The Mogen Avraham, the wrote Mogen Avraham, there's a story. The Mogen Avraham writes that he couldn't understand why his grandmother didn't daven. Didn't daven Shmon Esrei. So once he was up very late at night and his grandmother got up very early in order to make bread and take challah and do the mitzvahs. And he heard her talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu about the family. So he said, okay, my grandmother's talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, why should she doubt it? like it doesn't make any sense. So that's what they said. These famous people can tell famous stories about their famous grandmothers. You know. Yes.
Looking at this last night, maybe I was just reading too much into the Rambam. I understood it as people were not, it was not coveted to speak to Hashem in Hebrew or Yiddish or this mixture of languages. Yes, one language is fine, whether it be Hebrew, English, Greek, whatever. but to start jumbling it together.
No, but it says kol tzorcho. It says eina yochol. I mean, what you're saying is probably true as well, but I'm not sure. What?
Kol tzorcho v'loshen achas.
Right. Ela b'shibush.
Right. It was a bilbul of languages.
Yeah, but where did this come from, that this bilbul of languages is problematic?
It's not covetic.
But this is the only language you know. What God would it be not covetic?
But that is what English is.
Yes, but okay. What difference does it make? If you can't speak any other way, that should exclude you from doing a mitzvah of tefillah?
No, but that wouldn't exclude, but it could make it to where the Chachamim would make the takana that this is a set format.
Okay.
The Rav saying that their language was so weak that they couldn't express themselves at all, even if it was in a mixture of languages.
That's hard to...
Like, I think that's what we're striving.
The Rambam is talking about two periods. There's an earlier period, where if you wanted to daven, you just said daven, and people knew how to do it. And then there was a later period, where people couldn't do it. Now, what happened in between is not so clear. Not so clear. Because the Rambam says that the reason that they were metake in the Shemona Esrei was because there was no other possibility. People couldn't daven. The mitzvah of davening was endangered. People were not going to daven. Now, why this happened? The Rambam said something. It doesn't really matter. Doesn't matter, but the Rambam's position is that the takone of Shemona Esrei fulfilled a need. There was a problem, and the Chachomim, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, came to solve that problem. Yes, and the problem that they solved was not a problem of Kavanah, at least as the Rambam is explaining, but the problem that they came to solve was a problem of language, of saying the words, of speaking to God as you should. Whether it had something to do with kavod or had something to do with something else, whatever you say. The important thing, I think, is that something happened. I mean, people weren't able to daven. So then, yes?
That felt like, to daven, like, God, I need new shoes. Please give me new shoes. Like, how is that, like, is that what you mean by unable to do that? Or you mean like a proper, you know, like start with Shevach and then ask your needs and then thank? It's like, is that what the Rav means? Like a
Yeah. Because, no, that's
God,
the mitzvah.
Like, I need to eat today. Please provide me lunch.
They weren't. That's a good idea. No, they weren't able to do the mitzvah. The Rambam defines the mitzvah as saying Shevach, Bakosha, Hodoya. They weren't able to put it together somehow. Now, what the reason that they weren't, that they could ask God for a new pair of shoes? Yeah, they could ask God for a new pair of shoes. You could always do that. That has nothing to do with the mitzvah of tefillah. The mitzvah of tefillah has a formal kind of presentation. And they were not able to do that. And so the Chachamim made a takonah. Now, in the middle, you have the question of why weren't they able to do that? Okay. So the Rambam says what he says. We had a difference of opinion about what the Rambam means. But in any event, whatever, the Rambam thinks that there must have been a reason. It wasn't just to upgrade tefillah. It wasn't like the Rambam said, look, everybody davened, okay, but, you know, it wasn't poetic, it wasn't stylish, it wasn't, so the Chachamim created Shemona Esrei. It wasn't like that. It was much more severe. The problem was much more severe. For some reason, davening itself was in jeopardy. He quotes a pasuk in Nehemiah, and the pasuk says, where is that? So the kevan shu medaber near yuchol daber kol tzorkod lechemchat. Ela b'shivush neamar. The quotes a pasuk. Uvenehem chatzim medaber ashdodit, whatever that is. In Ashdod, they probably spoke Babylonian. Ashdodit. Right? This is the language. It wasn't Hebrew. The Gomer. Veinam makirim medaber Yehudit. They could not speak Hebrew. Ulekashon am va'am. Like every nation has a language, right? The Pasuk in Megillat Esther. Right, that's something So the Rambam defines, in other words, you could say this pshat. You say, it's true that everybody can daven in any language that he or she knows. Right? You don't have to daven in Hebrew. But if all of Am Yisrael can't daven in Hebrew, that's a problem. You understand? In other words, you've got to maintain in davening a sense of nationhood. That there's a certain aspect of that. That's why we daven b'tzibur, right? There's the idea of tefillah b'tzibur, that there's a certain aspect of tefillah which necessitates tzibur. And that, the Rambam calls, we call Am Va'am. That every nation has a language. That's what defines it. So when you turn to God, even as an individual, you turn to God as a member of the nation. A member of the nation, the chosen nation, the holy nation, the special nation, but you're part of that. And therefore, if no one can speak to God in Hebrew, you lose your nationality. You lose your nationness, or whatever that is, Shneimar, etc. Kishon Am Va'am, u'mipnei zeh, kishayachad mehem mitpalel tekzar lashono lish'ol chafatzav, o lagid shevach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it means tekzar lashono. Tekzar lashono, I guess, means couldn't do it properly. Tekzar lashono. He didn't have the words. What difference does it make if the childish know in heaven makes a difference? If it is true that there is a little negative about speaking to heaven in Aramaic, but besides that, in theory, why should it make any difference to God if you're speaking to God in a simple way, or you're speaking to God in a more sophisticated way? I mean, what difference does it make? So I think that this idea of the nationhood somehow comes into play, even though it sounds like a kind of very modern idea. But I think that the Rambam had a certain sense of nation. It's like the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah. Remember the Rambam Hilchos Chanukah? The Rambam says that the Chashmonaim beat down the Yevanim, Greeks, and they established Malchut in Israel for approximately 200 years. That's what the Rambam says. And of course, this is correct. Look, if you count from right 135 or something BCE until 70, you come up to 200 years, right? So everybody asks, why did the Rambam say they had Malchut for 200 years? After all, most of the kings of the Chashmonaim were really very bad people and fought against the Torah in different ways. Until you get to Herod, who was a lunatic, right? And certainly was not the kind of figure that we would be proud of. So the answer might be that the Rambam had a certain respect for Malchut. That the fact that there was a king, a Jewish king in Israel, that meant something to the Rambam. And even though we know that not all the kings of Israel were good guys, some of them were quite the opposite, nevertheless, Malchut was a desired state of being, right? That the Rambam, so the Rambam says 200 years. The Rambam says 200 years.
So, setting aside this question whether God appreciates prayer expressed in different languages or in mishmash of languages, it certainly makes a difference for the prayer, for the person who prays, to be able to express himself in a proper way. So I feel there is like a cultural linguistic breakdown going on in here. That you lost something which you already had, but you haven't acquired something new instead. So in a way, when you try to express yourself, you have to mix the old with the new, and somehow if they don't fit, like if you want to buy a pair of shoes, or you go to the shop and you ask for a pair of shoes, but if you want to address God, it's just inappropriate to express yourself in the same way as if you were in a shop.
Okay.
Why?
Okay, I mean, I understand that. What part that I don't understand is that before this happened, before the exile, when all of Bnei Yisrael, according to the Rambam, were davening on their own, by that to say that everybody had this exalted notion, besides which they spoke Aramaic in Eretz Yisrael. They spoke Aramaic in Eretz Yisrael. It was only the learned people in the Mishnah who wrote the Mishnah who spoke to each other in Hebrew. It was kind of a Latin that they used. But the people had a mish of Hebrew and Aramaic, even then, even before the Galut. So I don't know. I mean, you're right. If you say, I will assume that exalted means something, and in order to get people in the direction of exalted, I will say nobody can do it. Nobody can do it. Only Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. I wonder why they didn't use tefillot from the Tanakh automatically before, because they would be exalted. All these tefillot are new. They're all... Anyway, fine. I mean, I understand. It's good. Since Ezra and Beit Dino saw that there was this issue, this problem, this difficulty in davening, amdu v'tiknu lehem shmona esrei brachot al haseder. I don't explain exactly why there are brachot. Why are the shmona esrei topics? I understand. Why do we need shmona esrei brachot? I mean, we know that on Yom Tov, there's only one bracha in the middle. We could have, and there's also a short Shmona Esrei, which is one bracha that includes all of the topics in Shmona Esrei, which probably, well, you know, history is difficult, as I said. Shalosh rishonot shevach l'Hashem, shalosh achronot hodaya, and tzayot yesh bem sheilot kol advarim shehen kemo avot v'kol chafzei ish ve'ish. ולצורכי הציבור כולון כדי שיהיו ארוחות בפי הכל וילמדו אותם ותהיה תפילות אלה העגלים, are people who can't speak, people who are difficult, whatever that means in this particular case. תפילה שלמה כתפילת בעלי הלשון הצחה, those who have pure language, clean language, exalted perhaps language, lashon tzecha. Umipnei inyan ze tiknu kol habrachot v'atfilot mesudarot b'fi kol Yisrael, kidei sheye inyan kol bracha aruch b'fi ha'alag. Now, alagim, I mean, if today people are not alagim, today a lot of people speak Hebrew and write Hebrew and know Hebrew. Should they stop saying Shmon Esrei? Okay, so you say, well, you can't change anything that's established, but maybe then everybody should daven an extra daven. Besides Shmon Esrei, should also take the time and effort to daven on his own. Because it would seem that if you have the language and you're able to do it, I would think that that's a more exalted way of davening than just saying, well, so if you say what you're supposed to say, right, you can't change that. But then afterwards you added a tefillah, that would be even better, but the Rambam doesn't say that. Okay, we've done enough with this Rambam. Let's look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, Ein ondim litpalel ela mitoch kovid rosh. That's the Mishnah. Rashi says, Kovid Rosh is Hachna'ah. I tried to tell you yesterday that these are difficult words, and it's very hard to know how you accomplish any of these things. But if you think God is God, then the only way to address God is Mitoch Hachna'ah. The Gemara says, Menane Mile. Right, Menane Mile means, what's the source? Right? The Gemara only asks this question if it has a source. It never says, the Gemara never says, Menani Mile, I don't know. The Gemara always says, Menani Mile, there's an answer. Even if the answer is a little shaky, like, or strange, or not expected, they say, nevertheless, Menani Mile introduces an answer that already exists. What's the answer? Amar Elazar the Makra. Ah, there's a pasuk. There's a pasuk. And the pasuk is about Chana. And you know that Chana is one of the people who taught us how to daven, according to the Gemara. There are two people, Chana and David HaMelech. Those are the two people who taught us how to daven. So it says in the pasuk, V'himarat nefesh. Himarat nefesh. Himarat nefesh. She was bitter, right? There was something bitter in her soul. Mimai. Himarat nefesh. Mimai. Dilma chani shana. Dahava merira liba tuva. Maybe this pasuk doesn't mean that everybody should be that way. Maybe she was that way, because she had a terrible, she had something to be very unhappy about. Merira liba tuva. Ela omar Rav Yosi bar Chanina mehacha. We'll learn it from a different pasuk. Va'ani berov chastecha, avol beitecha, shlachavol hekakot shecha, biyiratecha. Ani, right, David HaMelech says, berov chastecha, because of all the chesed that I have received, avol beitecha, I will come to your house, eshtachavel hekakot shecha, biyiratecha. Biyiratecha. So that yira is the proper way to approach God according to this pasuk. Memai. So, can you learn from this pasuk about everybody who approaches God? Dilma David Shane, Dave Mitzare, Nafshe Berachme Tuva. Berachme Tuva. He says, maybe David Shane, maybe David HaMelech is different than everybody else, because the Hava Mitzair Nafshe Berachme Tuve. Right, what is Rachme? What does the word Rachme mean?
Mercy.
What?
Mercy.
In Hebrew Rachme means mercy. In Aramaic, Rachme usually means love. Right? Rachme Tuve. Rachme Tuva means a lot of it. Right? Ela Amar Rabbi Yeshua. So we have two attempts to find out what people should be like when they approach God, and both are rejected. Not rejected in essence, but rejected as models for behavior, right? In other words, you could be that way, but you don't have to be that way.
Also, at the hotel today, if you try to bow to God, lots of women will yell at you.
Who's going to yell at you?
The other women at the hotel will freak out if you try to bow properly.
Oh, you mean politics? it's a politics. Besides, now she berachme tuva. Ela amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi mihacha. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, he says, no, there's another pasuk. Ishtachavu Hashem bahadrat kodesh. Ishtachavu Hashem. Bow down to Hashem. Bahadrat kodesh. Hadar is a word. Like, what does it mean? Hadar.
Beauty.
Rich?
Splendor.
Oh, splendor. Good, I like that. Would you, if I said splendor, would you agree with me?
Yeah.
Okay. The fact that I don't know what splendor is exactly, right, that doesn't have to bother anybody. There is this trick that if you substitute a word you don't understand for the word you don't understand in another language, it sort of clarifies it.
Especially if someone else understands.
No, it's like, you know, so, but here it doesn't really matter so much, as you see. Hishtachavu Hashem b'hadrat kodesh. Bow down to Hashem with the splendor, where there's a splendor of, of sanctity. Also a word that is hard to understand. Al tikrei b'hadrat ela b'cherdat. Now this is a midrashic method. A midrashic, very often Chachamim say Al Tikrei Ella. Now don't read it as though this were written. Just read it as though that was written. And this is not a Kri Uchtiv. It's not Kri Uchtiv. Kri Uchtiv is something that is formalized and part of the text of the Tanakh. Right? In other words, there are words in the Tanakh that are written one way, in the Tanakh meaning including the Torah, but read in a different way. And that's the way it is. And that goes back perhaps to Ezra. That goes back to Ezra, who said himself that he did things like that. He had to figure out which Nusach was correct, and sometimes he couldn't figure it out. This explanation is a little strange when it comes to changes like who and he. Right? The word who and he, the word who is written hey, vav, aleph, but sometimes it's read as he. So it's hard to know where this all comes from. But when they came back from Bavel, then now I'm telling you something that is very partially true and partially my imagination. They came back from Bavel, they came with Sifrei Torah. And even though they'd only been away for 50 years, but then later on, more people came with more Sifrei Torah. And even though they tried to copy the Sifrei Torah carefully, it was probably true that some were known to be better than others. Some Sifrei Torah known to be better than others, but many Sifrei Torah were different one from the other. And since they were different one from the other, someone had to decide. The person who decided was Ezra, who is also called HaSofer. And the reason that Ezra is called HaSofer is because he was amongst the people who, by counting the letters, was able to determine what the correct Nusach was. In other words, if there are two Nuschaot for a Pasuk, or two Nuschaot for a word, and one Nusach has more letters, and the other Nusach has fewer letters, how could you determine which one is right? So you could do it. You could do it by svara, but svara is always faulty, right? Because you know there's no svara that is absolutely winning, a winner. But svara is not like math. Svara is good for the moment. So you look for an objective criteria. An objective criteria is counting the letters. Now, let's say you know that in the book of the parasha of so-and-so, there are X number of letters. So then if you have a Ksav Yad, or you have a Sefer Torah where there are more letters than you know there should be, so you could erase that girsa. But it's not always true. I mean, sometimes the Sifrei Torah are at variance with each other, and there's nothing you can do about it. So Ezra fixed as much as he could fix. And the amazing thing about the Sefer Torah, is that today, that means from Ezra, Ezra is 400s, right? Until the 900s, the 800s, when the Baalei Mesorah were worked. During that period of time, the Sefer Torah, the Nusach of the Sefer Torah, became absolutely stabilized. So much so that every Sefer Torah today is exactly the same. This is nothing short of a miracle. I mean, you're talking about people copying the Sefer Torah by hand. Even people with good intention. I mean, everybody makes a mistake. Everybody says there are all kinds of rules that you should do it several times, read it, and then have Hagah. I mean, but it doesn't matter. There are always mistakes. There are always mistakes when you write a Sefer Torah. Always. They have this computer program that checks Mole and Chaser. That's all it does. You put the Sefer Torah into the something or other, and then it goes, it makes a noise, and it rolls all the Sefer Torah, and out comes, here's an extra Vav, here's an extra Yud. It's inconceivable that you're going to find a Sefer Torah that has no mistakes in it. Nevertheless, the Nusach of the Sefer Torah is absolutely fixed, except for two words. except for two words. You want to know what those two words are? So you look at the Korein Tanakh, in the back of the Tanakh, and it'll tell you what the two words are. So that's a miracle.
You're not going to tell us?
Well, if I told you...
then we would know.
There's got to be something left out of the story. The two words. It's to my mind, it's a Nes Galui. It's Varish a Nes Galui, that every Sefer Torah is exactly the same. So that you know that when you go to a shul, like a legitimate shul, not an illegitimate shul, but a legitimate. Even if you went to an illegitimate shul, because they all get Sefer Torah from legitimate Sofrim. There are no, the Sefer business does not have an illegitimate section to it. You know, a Sofer is a, they're all from what? Because they print them out, though. Right. They print them out. Yeah, I don't mean that. I mean, okay. So if you take any Sefer Torah, any shul, you be Yotze Kriyas HaTorah, you be Yotze the Mitzvah Kriyas HaTorah, because they're all absolutely bestated. It doesn't matter if they're Ashkenaz or Sfarad. Talk about the Nusach, not about the way you make the letters. There are very small differences between the Ashkenaz and the Sfarad and how they make the letters. But that's not Ma'akev. Not Ma'akev anything. So you could go to any shul, go to a Yemenite shul, go to an Ashkenazi shul, go to a Sfaradi shul, they're all the same. The Sefer Torah, the Kriyata Torah is all the same. So now here we are. So Al Tikre. So we're up to, I'm trying to tell you what Al Tikre is. Al Tikre, in this case, a little strange. Because even though the Pasuk says Bahadrat Kodesh, and there is no argument about that, there's no other version. No other version. But here, what the Gemara seems to be saying is that a hey and a chet are very close. It's not really true. How do you make a hey? A hey is a dalet. Yeah, I'll draw it to you. Here's a dalet. Dalet has a vav on top, right? And a vav over there. And a yud. Right? A vav, and a yud. That's all the letters in the Hebrew alphabet are in Sefers are composites of letters. They're all letters putting together with letters. So the letter He is a vav, and a yud. Okay? The letter chet, however, is... Well, let's say for most Ashkenazim, is a Zion, and a cap. So, a Zion, what's a Zion? A Zion is a Vav, the bottom part is a Vav, with a Yud, a little Yud on top of it. That's a Zion. So you take one Zion and another Zion, and then you put a cap on it. That's a Ches. Or, the other Shita is a Vav and a Zion. Take a Vav and a Zion, and then you put a cap on it, you get a Chet. So that the Hey and the Chet don't really have anything to do with each other. However, maybe it was the pronunciation. Maybe it was the pronunciation of the Hey and the Chet that were close. But the Gemara says, Al Tikre Hey, Ela Tikre Chet. Don't read it as though it's written with a hey, Alabet Gimel Dalet Hey, but read it as though it's written with a Chet. Dalet Hey Vav Zayin Chet. That's what the Gemara says.
No, but it's always exchanging the Dalet and the
Rei.
That too.
It's not Chadarat. That's another problem you mean. It means a problem, or you're happy about that?
No.
The whole thing doesn't make any sense.
I like it.
But I think it has something to do with pronunciation. The way it sounded. Like you could make sometimes letters got mixed up when you said them. I mean, I don't know. Al tikrei behadrat ela becherdat. Cherdat charada. Charada is fear. Mimai dilma la'olam eimalach hadrat Mamash, the Gemara says. Who says? Maybe it's Hadrat Mamash, Ki Hadrat Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda. So we know about Rabbi Yehuda, Hava Mitzayin Nafshei Bahadar Mitzalei, that he would get dressed up, Mitzayin, Tziyunim. You don't remember the famous Medrash about Hatzivu Lechem Tziyunim, that Yirmiyahu HaNavi said that when you leave Eretz Yisrael, you need designating things. You have to designate who you are. And so the explanation in the Medrash is that it was mitzvot, Hatzivu Lechem Tziyunim, that you should do the mitzvot when you're in Chutz La'aretz, so everybody will know who you are. Here, the word is used apparently mitzayei nafshei v'hadar matzlei. I don't know what mitzayei nafshei. Rashi says that's how we usually explain it, mekashet atzmo bivgadav, that he would adorn himself with his clothing. He would get dressed up to daven. He wouldn't daven in his regular clothing. He wouldn't dress down.
Or he put a talus on.
You mean today?
No, he put a talus on. That's an adornment.
It could be, but I'm not sure that's what it means.
In Rav Yehuda's time, men would wear the tefillin all day as a garment.
Only if they had a garment that had four corners.
No, I mean, there was a custom in that time period that men, as a garment, would wear their talus all day.
There were people like that.
Yes.
But most people were not like that.
Oh, okay.
It was only if you had a four-cornered garment or you went out of your way to get such a garment that you had to have tzitzit. Otherwise, the people didn't wear tzitzit. It's only when wearing tzitzit became totally neglected that the chachomim made this takana that men should wear four-corner garments and force themselves to wear tzitzit. That's what we do today. And we basically force ourselves to sort of do a mitzvah. I mean, it's not so obvious, because the four-cornered garment that most men wear is not a garment at all. In other words, if you define a garment by something that somebody wears, by somebody in the world wears this garment. I mean, nobody wears the garment that most men wear that they put tzitzis on. It's like sort of totally unnecessary. But we're so used to doing this mitzvah that, or trying to do this mitzvah, that even if you wear, it even supplanted a talus. The minig was that the children, at least boys, when they became bar mitzvah, they would wear a talus to do that mitzvah. I mean, why is talus less important than tefillin? Boys who are bar mitzvah put on tefillin, right? They put on tefillin forever. That's boys who are bar mitzvah. So why don't they put on a talus? Well, they did once. They did once, and somehow, for whatever reason, maybe because they couldn't afford it, maybe because it just wasn't practical, they moved the age for wearing a talis to marriage, which makes absolutely no sense at all. What does wearing a talis have to do with getting married? I mean, I understand if the kala buys the chotzer a talis, so that's a connection. But that seems to me to be secondary.
So she can tell that he's not married.
Okay, she goes to shul and looks to see what's the schora available.
Sfaradim do wear.
Sfaradim and Yekis. Right, Yekis also have the old minhag. And the Sfaradim also have the older minhag. And the minhag of the Ashkenazim doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make sense, but the wearing that, for whatever reason, wearing a talit katan became very important. Became like instead of the talit gadol. The only thing is that we return to a state of sanity, because even Ashkenazim don't make a bracha on a talit katan when they're going to wear a talit gadol. Right, so that's like a certain kind of return to sanity on this matter. Was the Talit Katan became a it became like a sign. It was like everybody, every group has to determine in what way they're going to look different than everybody else. How different do you want to look, right? So the Hasidim are the winners on the how different how different you want to look competition. And look, I think it works for them. Generally speaking, you know, it works. But everybody, I think, agrees that you have to look, you have to have a team uniform. You know, like everybody, it doesn't matter, you know, who you are. You have to have a uniform, and that Talit Katan, the tzitzis, for example, became part of the uniform, like wearing your tzitzis out. In Europe, in yeshivot in Europe, nobody did that. In Lithuanian yeshivas, it was like they never heard of that. It's like so the Hasidim who lahachis like wore their tzitzis outside of their clothes, you know, like they wore a talis kotat like you wear a talis godol. So they influenced eventually. They influenced the minhag of the yeshivot, which is like to emphasize the tzitzit, to emphasize the tzitzit more. So that's what he says. Haba mitzayim nafshei v'hoda mitzalei. Elo amar av nachmo v'yitzog mehocha. Elo amar av nachmo is mehocha. Mehocha means, this is the pasuk we're looking for. Evdo et Hashem b'yir'ah, v'gilu b'yir'adah. V'gilu b'yir'ah. So that has, evdo et Hashem b'yir'ah. Fear, gilu. Gil is joy. Bir ada with trembling. My vigil bir ada. Avavada ba matna. Amaraba bemokom gila shamtehira ada. Like the place where joy, that's where there should be ada. Rashi says, Ivdu tashem bi yira, tfila shehilanu bemakom avoda asuota bi yira. Right, so in other words, what are we looking for? We're looking for a source for Kovod Rosh, right? We're looking for a source for Kovod Rosh. But we come to other words, which I guess the Gemara wants us to know are like somehow parallel. Kovod Rosh equals Yirah, for example. Kovod Rosh equals Yirah. I'm sorry. Omar Robert Mogan Gilashom Dei Rada Abaye Hava Yativ Kamei De Rabba Abaye Have a yativ, yashav, kamei de rabba, lifnei rabba. Chazaya, histakel alav, or ra'alto, he saw him, davakav badach tuva. Imagine this. Imagine this, a bayer rabba sitting around telling jokes. I mean, like, it's hard even to imagine. Well,
they're good jokes.
I hope so.
Badach tuva.
No, but tuva means a lot. It doesn't mean good. I think badach tuva means a lot. Omar, the gilu bir adak tiv. Says, what are you doing? So I guess he was davening. Badach tuva. He says, what a gilu bir ada. I mean, any time, all the time, gilu bir ada.
Was he in a deep Karabakhian trance? So he's going for like 10 minutes longer than everyone else.
I don't know. It says Badach Tuva. Badach Tuva doesn't sound like he's in a trance. But maybe. Omar the Gilubir Adaktiv. They said to him, what's going on? It says Gilubir Ada. Amali Ana Tfilin Men Nachna. Now, this is an important thing. He says, when I daven, I'm wearing tefillin. I'm not tefillin menachna. So tefillin, that's good enough. That takes care of all of the gilu bir oda that I need. Right? And as Rashi says, I think, Rashi says, no, Rashi doesn't. What?
The
right at the bottom, right. V'heim eidut shemem shelet koni u'mishoto alai. And so the tefillin are a proof that I am subjected, I subject myself to the will of God. And that's Ra'ada. That's Ra'ada, and that's Yir'ah. And this is, no, it doesn't make any difference that I'm Bodach Tuva, because I'm wearing tefillin. I don't think anybody would go for that today. Imagine telling a kid who's making noise during davening that, you know, it tells you, I'm wearing tefillin, and you say, well, it wouldn't work. You see, there is no reference to the Rambam. The Rambam did not pass in this Bodach Tuva halacha. Overlay the call Etzev Yem Mutar Ktiv. Right, the Pasuk in Mishle. Etzev. Omar lay, the chol etzev yem motar ketiv. It says in the pasuk, every Rashi says ka adam mar'e et atzmo atzav atzev otzuv atzuv yelo sechar. So that if you're unhappy, you get a premium. It's good to be unhappy. Omar lay anat tefillin menachno. Right? I'm sorry, I skipped the line. Right? Rav Chiya Chazaya Dahavakla Bodach Tuva Omale Bekol Etzel Yem Motar Ktiv Omale Anat Tfilin Menachna. He says you should be unhappy. So he says I have tefillin. Well, what do you mean I have tefillin? That makes me unhappy. Or that makes me a subject. Or that makes me accepting of the dominion, a dominion of God. Mar Berei De Ravina Ovad Hilula the Bray. Mar Barav Bray de Ravina. Right? That's Ravina and Rav Ashi are the last generation of Moroim and Bogel, sort of. Mar was his son, the son of the last generation. Ovad Hilula the Bray. I guess he had a bar mitzvah. Bray, his son. Chazan who. What?
It's his wedding.
What is it?
Isn't it a wedding feast?
Said what?
It's not a wedding feast.
Oh, wedding. How do you know it's a wedding?
Corn.
Oh. There you go. I told you it's very good. All those translations are excellent. It says, Avad Hilula the Bray. So I guess, you know, you want to upgrade the text a little, so make it a wedding. Chazan Huli Rabbanan de Havak had Badache Tuba. So they saw him. They saw him having a good time, whatever that means. We don't know anymore what that means. Kabadachei tuva. What does the Koran say? Kabadachei tuva.
Who were excessively joyous.
Oh.
Rabbi, I have a question.
Yeah.
I know that this is a little bit sidetracked, but in the writings, in all sorrow there is profit, is how it's translated here. The pasuk,
in Mishle,
I don't know what that means.
Well, if you don't know what that means, you're getting the idea.
Okay.
Of the learning here.
Okay.
But before 2 days ago, you would have understood it perfectly. I take kase demukra bata baba zuza. Betova Kamai, can you imagine these like tough guys? The guy, I mean, I wouldn't want to be with this guy. Aite Kasa de Mukra. He brought, Rashi says, Kot Shel Zchuchit Levana. He brought a glass, he took a glass, a very, very expensive glass. Bat Abama Azuze, which sounds like a lot of money, 400 Zuz. Betavar Kamaihu. And he broke it in front of him and he caused them to be unhappy. I mean, this is a person who could be a great educator, but he would only be able to do this to people who had very expensive things in the house. It wouldn't work for the poorer people.
They would become sad even with less value.
I'm sure he took his own glass. He wouldn't break someone else's property.
So then why would it make
him? Now, look at this. See the Tosus? If you don't know, you should know the Tosus. Aiti Kasa de Zukiso. It's the next one. It's the next story, but it's the same idea. Ata Kasa de Zukiso Chivarta. Also, it's very expensive. Kos Mikad na'agul l'shaber z'chuchit b'nisu'in. So in other words, the reason that we break, let's just read the next few lines. Next few lines, Tova kamay v'atziva rav ashi ovad ilula l'berei chazanu l'rabbonon d'ahava kabat chay tuva ayte kasa de zugisa. Kasa de zugisa, who knows what that is. But it is, you see the reference, you see the star? The star on the right? The star is a reference on the right. You see that square, the square brackets? It says Ayin Tosus Shabbos, Divra Maskil, Vitosus Bab Metzia, Vichulin. You know, whenever you give a lot of references to explain a word that you don't understand, you know that you're in trouble. You know, it's like. So, Chivarta, Zugisa Chivarta, Vitavaka Maitu. Va'atzivu. He made him unhappy. So here, that's what Tosu says. I take kosa kasa the zukisa v'chivarta mekan nagul l'shaber zchuchit b'nisuin. So who says that it was nisuin? Tosfot. Tosfot seems to say. How does Tosfot know?
Read the Quran.
What?
He read the translation.
He read the
Quran. Good.
Okay. Okay, but in other words, besides the fact that there's the Churban Beit HaMikdash, and you want to have a memory of the Churban Beit HaMikdash, even at a wedding, a time of great simcha, the question was, so why do you break something made out of glass? Why did you make something made out of porcelain or something made out of something else?
It's softer on
right?
your feet.
So that comes from here. What?
It's softer on your feet.
Which feet?
Like the feet of the chasm. In my community, we have a custom to use a light bulb because the glass is soft.
Oh, I was just going to say that.
No, I said
that now they use a light bulb because the chasanim today, the chasanim are very weak. Hardly able to move around. So it's happened many times that they try to break the glass and nothing happened. Right? Then they stand there, they break, and it sounds like they're not married. You know, how can you be married? You can't break a glass. So they came up with this idea of a light bulb. But of course, a light bulb is, you can't just destroy things at a wedding. So the chumra is to use a spent light bulb, and not so easy to find a spent light bulb today. It's like, so that becomes a chesed group that has spent light bulbs. You know, as many as you want, you can get a spent light bulb.
actually, it flies in the face of this, because what happened? The husband breaks the glass, light bulb, whatever, and that's when everybody yells Mazel Tov, and there's all this jubilation.
Yes.
It's fine to be happy, not sad.
They're happy because
the Chuppah's over.
The minig in Yerushalayim is to break the glass in between the Erisin and the Nisuin.
So there is no Mazel.
So there is this this problem doesn't really exist. But I think that it's interesting. Tosa says why this happened, Dafka, at a wedding. I mean, there are all kinds of times you could have taken the trouble to mention Yerushalayim and the Churban Beis HaMikdash, but it's based on this Gemara, according to the Tosus. If you assume that the event that they're talking about is a wedding.
Today there's a custom where people take a glass and they smash it, and then they collect up the pieces and they make a mezuzah out of those pieces. Is that okay?
A mezuzah?
Yeah, they make a mezuzah out of shattered glass.
Other artwork.
Really?
Yes.
Isn't that the plate?
No.
They do it with the glass.
You send it to a special company and they make an artistic mezuzah out of the broken glass.
Yeah, that's a mezuzah. You can also do a wall of glass.
Genius.
I just see his eyes.
Anything to make think. A profit.
One of my daughters did that with their wedding invitation. They took the broken glass and a wall thing out of it. The logo that was on there.
Collage.
Out of the black broken glass.
You also could conclude that women are stronger than men because the plate's a lot harder to break than the...
Oh, yeah.
So the mother and the mother-in-law are a lot stronger than the husband.
Absolutely true.
Well, it's a big problem. It's a big problem.
They're not fasting that day.
No, because you break the plate in the... usually in the room of the chassan, where the chassan is sitting. And if you go to one of these nice weddings, so the floor has a carpet on it. So the women, they could... drop the plate on the carpet all they want. It's never going to break. So now the guy, every wedding has a wedding organizer. You can't have a wedding if you don't hire somebody to organize you. I mean, how would you know what to do? So the wedding organizer has a hammer. Smash the plate.
My mother actually cut her hand.
Why is it?
My wedding.
Why they smash the plate? That itself is a mystery. Okay, tomorrow what we're going to do is continue the Gemara and then do the Nefesh HaChaim that I said we would do today. We'll do it tomorrow. So first the Gemara. First we'll continue the Gemara and then we'll do the Nefesh HaChaim. So how much time do we have now?
Half hour.
A half hour. Okay, so... Continue the Gemara, and look at the Nefesh HaChaim. And there's also a translation of the Nefesh HaChaim, which I have never seen. I've seen the book, but I've never seen the translation. Okay. Did you come now to tell me to stop?
No. Oh.